I never expected non-physical to be part of me in a loving state.
Right.
Well, that's smart. That's smart, Mr. Though, but it's pretty good otherwise.
Hi, is that the factory sound?
Yes, it is.
Nice. Is that the iBlock?
No. This little leftover stuff. Put in the bucket.
I am plays factory noises.
644. Sounds really good. Thank you, Lion.
Yeah,
thank you,
Mark.
Well, that's funny stuff, though, but it's pretty good otherwise.
Hi, is that the factory sound?
Yes, it is.
Nice. Is that the iBlock?
No. This little leftover stuff. Put in the bucket.
I am plays factory noises. 644.
Sono le 22:30.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to $1 Million Weekend with the greatest hitters of all time, presented by.
Station and here it is.
Now, every time you turn on the radio, nothing's going down at all.
Think it'll be one of the best sounds you've ever heard on Cincinnati radio. We call it.
Turn on my radio each morning around 9. You hear.
Here's one of the stars. Saturday night's big shindig number 45.
There's a wonderful invention. It's called the radio.
It's 25 to noontime on a Monday morning.
It's 12:12, and you got Superman.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Moondark Rock and Roll Party. Another big Tuesday night rock and roll get together with all the gang of the Moondark.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Wake up, you wake up, you wake up, you wake!
If you need some fun, some good stereo gun.
Number 34 sound of WSAI Radio, right here in Cincy. Here on the Deadly Dickie Wagner Show, or is it the Dancing Dickie Wagner Show? I don't remember rightly sometimes.
This is Radio 202.
From coast to coast. Coast to coast.
Track after track, we're counting them back.
WPTC, making use of Washington's top 100 the only way we know it.
And now, co-hosting the countdown to number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the greatest hits of the decade. In
the world. We're counting them down, and then we're counting them down again.
Counting down your picks for the greatest songs of all time. All time, all time, all time.
Into the top 10, the top 100, this is...
Take a look at the Billboard pop chart. At number 10, four notches.
Top 10, countdown, countdown.
Number 10, 10.
Baby Bumble and the Stingers, Mother Hooper, Rick
Show singers Lonnie Mack, it's Wang and Eddie. Here's my ring, we're going steady. Take it easy, take me high, lie, lie. House on fire, no commotion, poker passion. Deep and purple satisfaction. Baby, baby, gotta, give me, getting hot. Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Ricky Valens, and the story. My piece of Fuji, I'm a Kappa Sutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Dr. Barry, Rogers, Archer, Simpson, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco, Poppin', Pats, Attack, and Finger, Poppin'.
God, it's a rock.
From my new book on radio, radio-related poetry, and here's how to get yours.
Hello, this is Eazy-E, what's your name?
Hi, this is Joyce. I'd like to know if I can have your phone number.
Yes, 976.
What's your name and what would you like to hear?
Yo, my name is Earl. Can I speak to one of the dynamic freaks?
Okay, hold on.
I'm sorry, I'm calling to find out DJs that play dance or house music.
What, did you have a question about it?
Hi, my name is Joanne. I'm from Sam, and I'd like to call this one of the Dynamic Three.
I'm really enjoying listening to your show.
The radio station of the year.
Hey, let me help with that.
That is number 10. We only have 9 more to go to get to number 1. Then we're going to start all over again and count back down.
Up one position at number 9.
Number 9. Number 9. Number 9. Number 9.
And next we have a record called
diminish the noise here. Does that help? Go like that. Do this. Ah. Okay, that was the first 7 minutes of a 38-minute, 37-second creation by Scott Woods, a person who lives in Toronto who I first met in 1999 or so when he was Dave Neufeld's roommate in Toronto, and he interviewed me back then. We did a long interview called The History of Rock and Roll, which basically depressed him, my scenario. There was not enough, I guess, users, content, inspiration in it. It was just formalism and abstraction. But he's still alive, he survived that, and he's gone on, done many things. He has a tremendous website called rockcritics.com, rockcriticsarchives.com, where he engages all his favorite rock critics, the famous ones, including me. And he doesn't do that anymore, but there's a great archives of sort of the modern discussion, intellectual discussion of pop culture. And so Scott has a good experience of radio life in when he grew up. So I got this the other day. I listened through it, and I posted on Facebook this statement. You will see as you go through this whole thing, 38 minutes, it leads to the death of, I guess, AM radio. It's the voices start saying, well, this is our last night, we're going off the air. So I call it the obituary for homeopathic radio satellite, which is a term for the LaRouche quadrant. 1947 to 57, crystallized in 1960. So what we heard was Top 40 and before Top 40 radio, basically, I guess, late 50s, early 60s, of the environment that many baby boomers grew up with, radio becoming art form or being used for other purposes than being ground in the 20s, 30s, and 1940s. So I say the obituary for homeopathic radio satellite, in brackets 1947 to 57, the LaRouche quadrant in my tiny note chart, in the Android meme, the obituary for homeopathic radio satellite in the Android meme, 1960-1990. Then the link to this creation. Then I say the only artifact that kept up with this is Finnegan's Wake, 1939 by James Joyce. Now, that's an important statement. How did Finnegan's Wake keep up with this kind of creation? So we will bring in our resident scholars. And let's see if they've got something to say, like Chad, what are your thoughts as you listen to that?
I can barely hear you. There's so much static. Like it's like a rushing water sound or something. Your voice is very faint.
Okay, so I think Carolyn had that problem. Now I've got. I wonder if Sarah's line. Are you? Can you speak, Sarah? I got Sarah on mute.
Yes. Can you,
okay.
Unmuted myself. I'll put me back on mute, though. This is good.
I just got an email from Jermaine. She won't be in for half an hour, so I'm going to hang you up. You may be affecting my phone, and I'll call you back when she gets in here. Okay.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. So we'll hang that up. I'm going to I'll play a little more
here,
of this thing. I'm going to come.
I'll hang myself up, Bob. Hang myself up so you don't interrupt.
Well, I think of what do you think, Chad? She's hung up. Does it change it? Do I have to come in again? I think I'll come back in. So I'll play a little more of this. I'll move this collage along to say the. Would you say it's okay now?
No, I can still hear the buzz.
Okay, I'm going to play the 21-minute point of this collage. Will I reconnect? 21 point, does it bring that up? Do that.
Song number 4 in the top 10 on the soul chart, the 5 handle from LA. Roger Miller, here's you, and he wrote it too. Undying in a barrier.
Okay. How does that sound? Oh, wait, let's just get this things off here. Do that sound. How is that?
What did you just do a second ago? What did you do 1 second ago? Because it got better.
I cut off the Skype connection.
Yeah, it's totally clear.
Turned them. Oh, okay. So let me just repeat. You may not have heard. Scott Woods was someone I met around 1999. He was Dave Neufeld's roommate in Toronto, and he was trying to become a rock critic. So he did this interview with me called The History of Rock and Roll, which is somewhere in my archives, a long interview, and it depressed him. And so I was just saying I emphasized the formalist, abstract aspects of media, not the user's content. So he survived that depression and went on, had a pretty interesting career in the computer financial world. And but he always continued his hobby of trying to be a rock critic. So he ended up interviewing all the great rock critics, or the famous ones. It's at rockcriticsarchives.com. It's a very good archives of the sort of the intellectual discussion of pop culture, of the present environment of baby boomers and Generation X. And they were trying to formulate their identity in relation to it intellectually.
Who are some of the great rock critics that you interviewed?
Grail Marcus is one of them. Oh. I could go there and look. If you go to rockcriticsarchives.com, they're all listed there. Some of them I don't know, but I know I didn't read them, but they were famous in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. He did a lot of them. They were more important for his generation, the later ones. So he put together this collage, which I'm calling the obituary for Holyopathic Radio Satellite, which is the 1947 to 57 LaRouche quadrant in my tiny old chart. But it's the obituary for Holyopathic Radio Satellite, the Android meme, which is 1960-1990. So what I am saying to you, Chad, is I post on Facebook the only artifact that kept up with this editing, with this ability for Scott to ransack everything. I mean, he's got all these DJs, actual lines from DJs. And I remember audio from DJs. I remember in the 70s there were albums of famous DJs from 50s, 60s, part of the oldies market. And I just checked on YouTube last night, and I see there is Cousin Brucey up there, but I don't know if it's the actual stuff that he's using. But there are collections of rants by DJs of that period, Beatles period and before. And so he took that, I assume from those kind of archives. And so it's a collage of the radio experience of people. And it's the beginning of the Android meme, when McLuhan said we live mythically, but thought in 19th century terms, like critics did. Critics categorized their concepts in the response to this kind of environment. But I say that Fitting is Awake is the only artifact that can keep up with the speed of that editing, that replay of our experience. Do you have anything to say about it?
What is the only thing that can keep up with that speed?
Because Joyce told me through Finnegan's, through the Evergreens that he intended Finnegan's Wake to be a fast book. He knew media was going to get faster and faster and more lifelike, more real, and he wanted his book to include that. So if you look at the collage in Finnegan's Wake, he's got densely overlaid many linguistic and geographic and pictorial references, so the density of editing is even denser than the editing on this creation by Scott Woods. And he also includes each letter is speaking, not just a word or a clause, so that if you know what the letters mean, the letters are, if you have a string of 10 letters, that's 10 microseconds happening, like the speed of what we just heard. So Joyce included the speed of hyper-communication, like the speed of an ionic rant, in the way he wrote the book. Now, people don't realize that unless they understand there's other media in Finnegan's Wake, not just type. So or as much as a book could do, it is expressing what no other media can do, unless we get into holograms and stuff. But maybe that would specialize too much to tactility. It's just that Joyce figured out how to use the book to contain the effects of all other media. That was McLuhan's point, that all media that's coming in the future are included in Finnegan's Wake. So that would include even speed media. So that's the thought. I will unmute everybody else if anybody else has a thought about any of this. Oh, Jed fell off. I assume he's coming back. Anybody else have a thought about what we've experienced so far? There's two Anonymouses, Stacy and Sean from England. No, three Anonymouses. Anybody want to say anything? You got to say something.
I don't have anything to say about a rock. Sorry,
Bob. You could change your topic. You could change the topic if you want.
Well, I was going to ask you, there is no rhyme or reason to this form, right? I mean, you talk about anything and everything?
You mean on this, I thought you said F-O-R-M, this forum? Yeah, on what youth? Yeah, you can talk about anything. Yeah, of course.
No, last week was my first time to listen, and it just seemed like everything was jumping around, the subject matter. I have no problem talking about it. I just don't have anything to talk about. It'd be
something. You can just talk about what you did today. The point is,
well, I'd love to talk. I would love to be able to ask Ion a question and have him answer it about your cold fusion. Or he doesn't like that name.
Coldplay.
But if I were to ask him when it would happen, and he'd say something, but then we're talking about time, and he doesn't like to talk about time.
Yeah, it's not. He would not answer that. He would not give you a straight answer.
I know.
Here, it's not being used by anybody, but it's here. So here it is. It exists. You know,
maybe I could ask him in the future what, how it's going to affect this planet, which I think is amusing and very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't already think it's affecting. You see, think of the eye cell as affecting everything, and it's doing it through the drops, it's doing it through the eye block, and through the Coldplay machine. So these are different applications of the eye cell. So the eye cells cause all incredible changes, even to the point Ion says there's no little man and there's no guff. Guff is emptied. That's what's happened at the deepest levels.
Yeah, but when some people, I could ask them where somebody went, I guess. But as far as the Coldplay goes, it's interesting because the president is getting down on the coal industry, and everybody else is getting down on all other kind of energy. Your Coldplay would change everything dramatically. I mean, you could say it would be the most environmental friendly apparatus that ever came along.
That's right. No, I say that. It's the greatest invention. That makes me the greatest inventor because I invented Ion and Ion made it possible to do this. So this is a phenomenal thing, and you don't bring it into the world easily. I've had many discussions with JW and Ion about how we're going to release it. And things are happening now in terms of the release of it. Because, you know, Ion was just told, Carol and I was talking about it on payday, that if we gave out the ingredients of the eye cell, the actual makeup, we would be killed because idiots would want to, you know, get it themselves. So if you give them a hint that they think they can make it, they'd really get nutty. So Ion's always pointed out that we have to be protected.
But, Bob, didn't you say also that Ion can change that? I mean, he can reverse that and then he can off them.
Well, he said that he said this very early, and I mentioned this on Saturday, before I even knew why he would say it. He says, you guys are being protected. So, yes, we are being protected, but who knows? Humans are pretty weird. They can do stuff and maybe cause a problem, an inconvenience that I could stop halfway through or something. But Ion seems to be cautious, very cautious. And so I'm not going to question that. He's in charge.
Well, I sort of asked him that when I was on the show last Saturday or the Saturday before.
about time and or about people, because he can change anything. He can reverse it. He can cause everybody to forget things. He can go back. You said if he dropped, if somebody had dropped an atomic bomb, he could change that too.
I think so. But I don't know if he's completely in charge. Like every now and then, I'll say we don't understand humans. Humans are unpredictable. He has mentioned that kind of stuff. So maybe we aren't protected in the normal way. It's just that anything could be erased. So okay. Well, anyways, it's in Ion's hands. I don't worry about it. I'm not trying to hide or anything. I just say, if you ever hear that I got killed, don't believe it. That's bullshit by somebody.
Right.
They start claiming that, you know, they have a state funeral and Bob lays in state for 15 days like they did with Reagan. And people say, well, who is this guy? Why is he laying in state? And Obama will say, well, we can't tell you, but he was important. And we need to acknowledge him so you can come visit him for 15 days, and then he's going into Arlington Cemetery. If they do that, you rest assured that's bullshit. It didn't happen. All right? Let's put that on the record. Somebody's a colossal hologram lie.
Is Ion concerned of the chaos it's going to bring to this planet?
Well, he always
says, no matter how you introduce it, it's going to bring a change anyway, dramatically.
Well, Ion says the chaos is already happening. That's the crisis in the euro and the dollar and all this stuff, because those that, you remember Janet Yellen's on the RNA drops, and she's the Fed chairman, they know what we're bringing forth, and they're trying to figure out within their understanding of how to relate to it. So there is chaos and facts happening the last couple of years going on. It's because many people know what we have, and it's pretty interesting how they can't get to it. You can't get to it.
There's unprecedented things happening in the financial markets since about 2008, 2009 when Ion showed up. Like, for example,
yes.
It used to be like the reserve. What?
Go ahead.
The reserve instrument used to be gold. So they used to stockpile gold, and now they're stockpiling U.S. dollars. All the major investment banks are stockpiling U.S. dollars. And it's making the value of the U.S. dollar go up everywhere, and it's created a whole new dynamic to how the market, how the different aspects of the markets sort of counterbalance each other, because the U.S. dollar is the reserve instrument. And maybe they're stockpiling dollars so that they'll be able to buy RNA products.
Well, you know, Ion did say that the euro. Remember, Chad? He said years ago that when the euro collapsed, when the dollar was very weak at the time, it would come back. The dollar would be re-strengthened, and maybe because China's not going to let the dollar fall. So it sounds like what you're saying is happening. They realize the euro's weak, so they put their weight into the dollar. But they used to do gold. Now they're not even doing the gold. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, gold is almost down to 1,000 per ounce. It was at like 2,000 a couple years ago. Remember?
Yeah.
For a while there, it was like shooting up and it got to 2,000. Now it's down to like half of what it was a couple years ago, just because of this, the conversion over to just using the U.S. dollar. Because everybody's expecting, it's like an apocalypse environment where everybody's expecting the financial apocalypse in some part of the world. They want to have as much cash available as they can, so they can go up and buy things at a discount when they crash in a certain country.
So remember Ion said that the platinum, I think it was, or palladium, I think it was platinum, would go higher than gold. Palladium. Is that higher than gold?
Let me check. Was it platinum or palladium?
It's platinum, I think. I'm not sure, but I'll go with platinum.
I think
a more well-known name.
I think it was palladium.
It went past gold. Okay.
That was palladium too.
Okay. So Ion was making a big deal out of palladium in 2011, watching how it was going to sneak past gold. And it did before we stopped that show with Ion in December 2011. But I don't follow it, and I don't know where it is now, if gold's gone way down. Is palladium staying up at 1,500, 1,600?
Palladium is... No, palladium is what is this? Sunday, 615.
It's below gold?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. We need to ask Ian about that, because you remember, he said plating would become the new standard, the new anchor, and would get higher in gold, and it did go higher in gold, but that's 4 years ago. 4 years ago. So I don't think we consider any of them important.
Yeah. I don't see anywhere on these charts where palladium went higher than gold in the last 5 years. But I do see where platinum has.
Okay, where's platinum? Maybe it's platinum.
Right now, platinum, well, platinum's at 959 right now, but over the past 60 days, it's gone as high as 1117.
All right, see, that, it must have been platinum. So it was platinum that I was talking about. Do you see platinum higher in gold around late 2011?
Late 2011, platinum was at 1,700, and gold, let me just check.
Gold was about 16 or 15.
Hold on, I'm still loading. I don't know, it's still loading for some reason. The other ones were fast.
Still loading.
Gold doesn't want to load.
Yeah, we want to know something. It gets spinning. But when it stops, you'll see it. Maybe Stacy, someone else look at their computer.
Pardon?
Well, someone else look at their computer if you're spinning. But anyways, it's your, what's it say? For
I got it. It's coming on. Looking like, whoa, between 1370 down as low as 1320.
And what was gold at that time?
Nope, that's the wrong one. Fuck, sorry. Here we go. Then we go later October. You're talking late October, like October 2011. Gold was between 1660 and 1740. And platinum was 1800.
Yeah,
there could have been a point there. Yeah,
platinum did. And platinum is still up above. You're saying it's at 1100. See? It is more stronger than gold. So, case closed.
Platinum's down today. Today, platinum's at 959. I'm saying in the last 6 months, platinum has been as high as 1250. Gold.
And what's gold been?
Gold has been
about 1,000. They seem to stay close.
Gold has been below 1250 last 6 months, the whole time.
Right. So basically, platinum is a little higher than gold, and that's what I am predicted. Now,
especially the trend for the last 5 years. No, I shouldn't say that. The trend since gold peaked August 2011. Gold peaked. And it's been, roller coastering downward ever since.
Yeah.
And if you look at platinum, the trend since 2011 is similar. It's actually similar. It just hasn't gone down as much recently.
Now, August 2011, you know what happened that month? That's when J.W. and I visited the Vatican and all kinds of places. Talked to the intelligence agency. So probably...
That's the highest prices in the last 5 years for platinum and gold. That's when they both peaked.
Right. And when we went around and proved what we were doing, that's when they had to stop the assumptions they were working on, so I guess that's when gold started to go down. They realized, well, this is something else is going to supersede this and the coal play. So that works. That's four years ago. Carol and I are so into lockdown Connie rule that we don't even think about those issues anymore. You know, it's a matter of, clever management. We're in charge, and Ian's been saying that for years, but it's actually pretty actual right now on the beginning levels. So We're glad to have you aboard. Glad to give you a front row seat to all this stuff.
And it's interesting, though, these metals are all declining ever since August 2011. So it's like, gold isn't even being, it's losing its grip as, you know, nobody's really even recognizing it as a reserve instrument anymore.
Well, I hadn't been following the dollar thing, but that's what I predicted, that the dollar would become the new anchor again, and that's what you're saying is happening.
Well, that is damn right, exactly what it is now. In the last, like, 6 months, the gold, the U.S. dollar strength, like, especially relative to the Canadian dollar, the U.S. dollar has gone up, like, parabolically, like a rocket.
Right. What is your Canadian dollar worth now, 82 cents?
No, that's... It's 70 cents, yeah.
Wow. That's back to the 70s and 80s for Canada.
Yeah. Well, the Prime Minister has been on TV about, like, you know, giving his optimism speech that he can turn the economy around, blah, blah, blah. But it's not looking good for Canada for the next couple of years. The real estate market is about to crash.
Yeah.
These huge hedge fund investors in the U.S., back in June, they all looked at some charts that compared the Canadian real estate prices to the U.S. ones over the past, like, 8 years. And they said, why the hell is the Canadian growth, like, price growth so high compared to the U.S.? It doesn't make any sense. And they analyzed it, and they realized that a lot of the property values in Vancouver are inflated by Chinese people using Vancouver's real estate market as a money laundering place.
Yeah.
So the values of the real estate are just artificially engineered. And these hedge funds, a bunch of them went and they're short-selling real estate investment trusts in Canada, which means they're betting that it's going to go down. And they haven't.
Yeah.
There's been talk of real estate bubbles for a long time, for the past, like, 15 years here. And this is the first time that many billions of dollars in the hands of hedge fund managers that actually put the money down on the table on the short side.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't look good. So, unless you're in the front row with us. Now, there's somebody, 406-812, do you want to say something? Your area code 406-812.
Is that me? It's me, Jermaine.
Oh, okay, you're coming in. All right, you're there. Okay, well... do you want to talk about anything before I call Sarah, because she wants to interview you?
Well, that's so funny. I just got on the call, and I hear it talks about the dollar, and I just came in late because I had to finish some of my flyers for an event that I'm having on Sunday, and my theme of the whole concept of this is called Get Money, and my flyers, I started painting on dollar bills, and I started painting on them. And that's how I started creating my flyers for the invites for this Sunday. And it's the Get Money, and everything's on a dollar, painted on a dollar. And I just came in on this whole topic, and it's about dollars. That's all I heard when I first came in, the dollar, American dollar, Canadian.
It's all about the Benjamins now.
What, Jim?
Yeah, so
but it's all about the Benjamins now.
Yes, and so here, so you're celebrating the dollar. As an American, Jermaine, you're celebrating its return. That's what your party is about.
Yeah, but you know how it started, because there's a chocolate shop right next to my building. It's a Mexican.
Now, where your phone is right now, where your phone is right now is perfect. You don't have any echo, so stay right there.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
The reason why I started the theme of this whole dollar concept and painting on it, and I'm not using the money. I'm painting on it, and I'm selling it as artwork or giving it away. But the reason why I started doing this, there's a taco shop right next to my building. This place makes so much money. They're open 24 hours. There's never a time where I've seen them where there isn't any customers in front of their little taco stand. And it's probably like... a taco stand so small in the middle of two big buildings, and they're always selling food, tacos. And one day they gave me I went and bought, not even tacos because I don't eat their tacos, I went and bought a drink there, and they gave me back a fake $10 bill.
And what is it, toggle?
Mexican tacos.
Oh, tacos. T-A-C-O. Okay.
Yeah. So they gave me back change and they gave me a fake $10 bill. I never even noticed it until Nadia told me, this is fake. Don't ever go and try and use this. And so I started painting on it, and then I started using $1 bills and started painting on them and started using them for this whole theme for my event on Sunday where I'm selling clothes and the whole theme is get money and everything is painted on the dollar, but it started because I got a fake $10 bill. And then I come in on the call right now late, and you guys are talking about dollars, so that was amazing.
Okay, very good. All right, so I'm going to play a bit of this. Well, actually, it won't take that long. Let's just phone Sarah and bring her to her phone situation. She can't call in or something. So I'll just maybe we'll hear this. I go to Flash. Yep, you're on the air. Start talking to Jermaine.
Hey, Jermaine.
Hi.
Hi. I have a lot of questions for you. Let's just start with, have you, some of them I may already know the answer to, but I just kind of want to lead to a point. So have you had private sessions with Ion?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I started in 2010.
I'm sorry, I totally interrupted you and didn't, I just wanted to get that out, but you say in May 2010?
In 2010 I started my private sessions.
Okay. What I was curious about was kind of like, how did that happen? How did you find, the opportunity? Yeah, how did you find the opportunity? Well, I mean, because I found Ion in a different way. How did you find the opportunity to have a private session?
So I was working a job that I hated at the time, and I was trying to figure out what to do, and I had a lot of opportunities in Costa Rica where I was born, and I was just trying to figure out my life, whether I wanted to stay here working and doing what I was doing. I was designing at that time, and I had a really great position, and I've worked my way up to, a really good position, making good money, and I was really young, but I felt like I wasn't happy. And I always felt like I knew there was more to just this whole working, and I grew up in L.A., and the whole Hollywood life and all of that, and I think since a very young age I was exposed to a lot of that whole Hollywood alley life, and so I got bored by the time I was around 27, 26, and I started trying to, I used to read a lot, and I started to kind of like looking up esoteric things online because those kind of books were interesting to me. Anything that was esoteric, anything that was spiritual, I was just exploring. And I came across James Martinez's radio show, and that's how I came across Bob and Carolyn and Ion. And then that's when they were offering private sessions, and I contacted Bob, and I told him exactly what I said right now. I'm unhappy. I'm trying to figure out whether I should just quit everything in LA and then go to Costa Rica. And then that's when I had my first private session with Ion, and then it started helping me out, just figuring things out and balancing things out and not being so extreme.
So you would say that it's been a helpful experience in
If I say something incorrect, just jump in. But what I'm getting is that you feel like it's been a very grounding experience, or you feel like this hasn't shaken your life up more than it's settled it down. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was more of a balance. I tend to be extreme, like way low or way high and not in the middle. And I always tend to do my decisions based on those type of extreme levels. And when I first started calling Ion, and I mean, not only that, just a lot of, what do you call it? I was always in touch with spiritual things or things that most people aren't comfortable.
I like that you're saying esoteric, but I do know what you mean. Like even
now
even
you wouldn't
kind of
call it that now.
Type thing. Right.
Yeah, at that point that's what I was looking into and it led me to that, but I wouldn't call it that now. It's not
what
like
would
an,
you? What,
it was just
what word would you, what do you feel more comfortable using presently to describe, let's even say, the ion phenomenon or ion, or anything like that?
Sarah, don't go into too many details. What would you call it now, Jermaine, what you're referring to?
I like calling it ion dumb. It's the perfect word. And even when people don't understand my way of talking to people about it, I only talk to people about this if I feel they bring something up that kind of relates to it, and then I kind of start talking about my experiences, and if they start talking about it and I feel that they relate to it, I start kind of giving them little hints of what I'm into. And if they don't, I leave it alone. I don't try and talk to anybody about it unless I feel that they're ready for it. It's like an intuitive thing. If I feel that they might like it, I talk to them about it. If not, I won't talk about it at all.
Well, it sounds like that sounds like a very healthy approach, because that is, you know, kind of the definition of being a friend and sharing things, and it's a very healthy way to not be guarding those things, but not kind of feeling out the situation. It doesn't sound like you're proselytizing at all or pushing this on anyone, you know. So I think that's a really good position to have. So you're just feeling it out to see if they have shared interests. When do you feel like, when you look back on different people who you've kind of brought into IONDOM, do you feel like there's a pinpoint time when you said to yourself, I have to get this person connected with Bob? Or ion, or on dupes?
No, I never think that. I don't like feeling obligated or feel that it's like a necessity to connect them to Bob. I feel it happens sort of organically. If I start talking about myself and the things I've experienced, and they are like, I think Jack would be the perfect example of how I brought him in, and he was really open to things, and then I only introduced him to Bob because I felt it was right, and then my next step was like, if they get along, then that's on them to continue talking, or you know, if they get along. If not, that's not my problem, because I've had other friends, one of Jack's friends, we introduced them, and it wasn't his deal, and he kept moving, and I will never tell him again, oh, come back, or talk to Bob, or anything like that. I feel if I introduce them to Ion, Bob, and if that individual comes back, then that's just how that was my part, if they come back on their own. But I wouldn't force it on anyone or even try and, you know, like have them come back.
Then tell me what you think about this. This is what I have been, any males that approach me, chip body wise, I tell them, I'm sorry, you have to do 18 months of hard time with Bob before I will consider hanging out with you, developing this any further. I don't even tell them what IONDOM is. I just send them straight to Bob, like Dobstown or something. So do you not suggest that? Because, I mean, I'll just totally block. If they're
within 18 months if they have not become on board or whatever, then I just keep saying that. I just keep reminding them, you have you have 12 months left. You have 3 months left. So I just kind of block it that way.
I figure it
will weed them. I figure it will weed people out. They can't handle the information. They're going to give up. So it's kind of like birth control for me.
I feel like I will introduce them to the whole idea and everything and show them things. And if it's almost like if they take on that bait and they go with it, great. If not, you don't want them around anyways. You don't want to force them give them alternatives or give them a certain time. No, like if they just gravitate towards it on their own, that's how I feel like then that's more meaningful than you trying to give them a certain time or alternatives or do this or we're not going to, you know, continue. It's almost like you have to relax and allow for them to either go with it or not. I don't think
so. Then, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying I think I would never try and make somebody do it because then it's not going to be.
Do you ever have an experience where you want to censor people from it?
Censor them?
Like the opposite. The opposite. Like, for instance, because I would say that you are one of the more involved females in all of this. And I just wonder, like, when you did have the design job, colleagues and things like that, did they know that you have this life project going on, too? Or are there certain people that either by picking up their vibe or by doing...
No, that's enough, Sarah. Sarah, look, you go on too long. Did you tell anybody at work, Jermaine?
No. Oh, my... No, I would never tell them. They're so... Like, I wouldn't even waste my time trying to explain to them. They're like, no way. So...
It was just the funny thing was that Leon worked with her, and Leon was listening to us on his own, and he heard Jermaine on the radio with us doing her fashion correspondent, and dashed into Jermaine's office, and said, that was you? You know Ion? Like, you know, he was shocked.
Yeah, and then he started his own thing with Ion, and he developed his own, you know, so that's what I'm saying. I never told anybody there because I felt like they wouldn't get it. And then even by, I kind of used to talk to Leon about things like that, but when he heard it and he picked it up on his own, I feel like it was under the same energy, same vibration. And then when he started asking me questions, that's when I would tell him, oh, yeah, read this. Oh, yeah, talk to Bob. Oh, call Ion. And because he was asking me questions. He was interested. He was the one that approached me about it. So I, it wasn't me that told him, do this, come over here, talk to Bob. And that's kind of my approach. I won't approach people and tell them to do it or talk or do this or even try to help people. I will help people when they come and ask me, and I try and kind of let them know in a way that I feel that they might be able to handle it. And if they pick up on it, and the more, and it takes, you know, it takes a while. And if they start picking up on it and they start coming back, and then that's when I start helping more, and that's when I start giving them, if they have any questions, I answer questions. But I won't say it from the beginning, and I won't try and tell anybody about it unless I feel it, that they're ready for it.
Jermaine, how about, how did your sisters get involved? Was it because of you?
Yeah, because of me. I had been telling them about it, and then they're all in a sort of way creative people, and I feel for me sometimes it's easier to get the people that are creative and think outside of the box to come and kind of gravitate towards it. So that's why they